There's a debate unfolding in the state Senate in North Dakota related to what has been called truth in sentencing. We're going to talk with the head of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation about their opposition to what is being proposed by Attorney General Drew Wrigley on the program for the better part of this hour. If you have a question or comment, it's welcome at 701-271-1100. You can also text us at 701-237-1590. Just got some breaking news out of the out of D.C. Never heard of this guy, but a congressman by the name of Warren Davidson of Ohio is announced his opposition to the Trump budget plan. And so this will put the one big, beautiful bill agenda we were talking to Julie Fedorchuk about yesterday in peril. And that's why the Senate has sort of done what they've done. Davidson and Tom Massey of Kentucky, along with another one I've never heard of, Victoria Spartz out of Indiana, publicly opposing this. I hope President Tim Burchard of Tennessee, another one, I hope he becomes like whip in chief. You got to get these people in a room and say, knock it off. You know what? This isn't perfect, but let's not make perfect the enemy of good. Knock it off and stop it immediately. But Speaker Johnson's one big, beautiful bill proposal in a little bit of trouble. We'll continue to follow that. Before we're done today, we'll get more of your comments in as well here on the program. Someone said, related to our Clint Hill conversation last hour, someone in the future, we should meet in Scott's office to discuss the untold story of the United States activating military worldwide. At the time, it could have been a Russian plot to kill JFK. Yeah, I wonder. I know that he wrote a lot of books about this. I've not read Clint Hill's books. Got a note from my neighbor, Vince, a moment ago here, who told me he's the guy that reads all the books, but he said the book Five Presidents by Clint Hill's fantastic. I don't know if he ever weighed in on that whole controversy, but thanks for the comment. We'll share others with you as well a little later on in the program. Let me welcome the director of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation in North Dakota. Coley Brandt is with us today at the UMary, at the University of Mary today. Thanks for coming up here.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming up on the Hill. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a North Dakota kid, grew up in Bowman, started in corrections in 97 as a correctional officer at the jail in Dickinson, and kind of just moved around between a case manager and warden. I was warden of several different facilities here in the state, and prior to being the director, I was the director of facility operations, just overseeing the facility, the prisons throughout the state and all the transitional facilities that we have.
And now as the director of DOCR, you report to the governor, is that right?
Yes, okay. That's correct, yep.
And appointed by Governor Burgum, as I recall?
Yep, originally, yes.
So you've been there how long now?
Been a little bit over a year.
Got it. Share your perspective on this debate that's happening in the Senate today. It's called Truth in Sentencing. We've talked about it extensively on the air, but the argument from some in law enforcement and Attorney General Wrigley, obviously, is, you know, the sentences for violent offenders that have been convicted, and drug traffickers is too lenient. The judge gives them the sentence. That's not the lenient part, but the Department of Correctional Rehabilitation lets them out before their sentence is done, and then law enforcement is saying we're seeing them again. So that's sort of the argument for doing this a little bit differently and setting a standard on, look, if you're a violent offender, you're a drug trafficker, you got to serve at least 85% of your sentence. Why is that a bad idea?
Yeah, so I mean that really isn't the piece of this bill that's the bad piece. So when we are opposing, it's really, we already have an 85% sentence. So we already have for violent offenders, we already have an 85% sentence for people that do a crime with a weapon, if they've got a gun on them. So they've already got minimum mandatories. We already have 85% sentencing. So this bill doesn't really impact those people at all, because my only authority to release someone is to release them according to the court order or the parole board. Well, the people that have a minimum mandatory or that they have a 85% sentence, those are not the folks that this bill actually impacts, because the laws are already in place for them.
When you talk about the laws being in place, what is it in place for? What kind of crimes does it cover related to the 85%?
So those are crimes of murder, burglary. I wish I had it with me, Scott, and I don't have the specific crimes listed.
Yeah, because I think it's important to define a violent criminal, right?
Correct.
And I believe drug traffickers are all also part of this legislation, which, I don't know, I would argue a drug trafficker is a serial killer, right? If you're trafficking drugs. I'm not talking about somebody using drugs. It's a whole other, conversation we ought to have. But does the 85% violent offender need to be broadened a little bit with that?
So I think that's a fair statement. So if we start looking at saying, okay, what are those crimes that we want to say should be 85%? Because right now under this bill, a person with that comes in with drug possession and driving under suspension. Driving under suspension would be something that they would have to actually serve 85% for.
Well, you don't get time for driving under suspension, do you?
Yeah, you would. So if you
go to jail for that?
You can go to jail, and then you also can end up in prison, because if you have a drug possession charge, and let's say you get a year and a day, and you go to prison for that, you'll also have a concurrent sentence, possibly of drug paraphernalia or driving under suspension. Those are all concurrently ran. Well, drug paraphernalia, according to this bill, would not be one, so you'd have to serve 85%. If you had driving under suspension, you'd have to serve 85%. And so there's only 18 crimes within this bill that actually get excluded, and there's pages and pages of crimes that a person comes to prison on. Most of the time, it's going to be a concurrent sentence. It's not going to be your leading sentence, but it's going to be all these other ones that a person would actually have to serve 85% of their sentence, similarly to somebody that was there for murder.
Should violent criminals and drug traffickers serve 85% of their sentence?
That's where that's really up to the legislature. But then we get into that's a whole different bill then, because now it's like saying, okay, what are these things that there should be? Just like they've done in the past with the minimum mandatories and the 85% sentence that's already there. Then that's where they should be debating that, is what are the crimes that we should be looking at versus putting it under everyone? Because right now, that's what this bill does.
And the consequences of this change would mean you need significantly more jail space, I assume.
Significantly more.
Yeah, if this ultimately passes. And again, it's in the Senate today. It'll be debated there. If it passes today, then the House will debate this on the back half of the legislative session. One email question before we go to the next piece here on sentencing, Colby, from a listener that says, if you oppose the very basic common sense reforms that Drew Wrigley is proposing, you should not be involved in law enforcement or the judiciary. Crime recidivism is a bad problem in the state that has literally resulted in murder that would have not have happened otherwise, says Adam. How would you respond to that, especially the recidivism piece there?
Well, I mean, the criminal justice system, I mean, it obviously starts from the streets, law enforcement picking someone up, going through state's attorney, going through the courts, coming to us, and there's a certain specific amount of time that somebody's going to be in prison. 95% of the people that come to us are released. And so through that process, it's really about giving people the opportunity to make some changes in their life, because people come to prison usually pretty broken. And so this is really about focusing on that. It's the punishment of being there, but our job is to try to send people out better than they came in. And so the reality is it's human behavior. And so it is. It's an extremely difficult job. I think about the correctional officers on the front line, the case managers, the parole officers, the probation officers. This is not for the faint of heart. The trauma and the things that they go through on that front line are extremely difficult. So this isn't about not thinking that that's important. It's about how we do it, and how we do it in a way that we believe and we factually can say that this improves recidivism the way North Dakota is currently running our programs.
How can you say that when violent crime is up? I don't remember the exact numbers of stats, but if you look at the last 10 years, it's like up every year. And not small numbers, right? You know, thousands more year over year over year. So how do we say recidivism is in a good spot if crime stats are up?
Yeah, so recidivism overall, we're about 40%. We've been about 40% recidivism for a long time. The folks that go through, so this program really targets transition. It targets people going through a transitional facility. So if somebody goes through a transitional facility as they're moving through the system and they earn that privilege and that opportunity to do that, through that safe transition back into the community, you're 30, you're 14% less likely to come back to prison. If you go through that and you're a nonviolent offender, 98% of the time, if a person does come back to prison, it's not for a violent offense. If a person that had a violent crime that goes through a transitional facility and they complete that, 92% of the time, they do not come back for a violent offense. So this is really targeting the right things to get people transitioning the right way. Addiction is a tough, tough thing. I mean, I think we can all agree that that is, it's very, very difficult. And so as people get back into society, we have to figure out ways to support them. Going from the prison to the street is not the best. That's a dramatic, dramatic piece of your life. And so really being able to have that transitional opportunity where you have support, you also have enforcement, because you've got the folks that are there doing the UAs, they're doing the substance abuse testing, they're doing searches of yourself, they're doing searches of your property. And so you have enforcement, plus you have that ability, like when you're having a tough day. The other piece of that is they're also responsible to pay for their fines, fees, restitution, child support. So now they're back in the workforce, they've got the support when they come home, and they're paying off those. And so I understand it's not perfect, and one victim's too many. So the piece that we can't lose sight of is this is all about the victim, because we don't want the next victim. And so when we're doing this, it really ends up being like, yes, do we have a 40% recidivism? That's, yes, we do. But we do know that the programs and what this bill targets is really those things that we know are successful for people as they return to our community.
And when you talk about them being successful related to someone with an addiction, be hard to argue with you that that makes total sense. And even the reality of you know, we need every live, able body in the workforce. And there are a lot of companies that are willing to say, you know what, made some mistakes in your life, you know, did your time, got treatment, and are back on. But walk me through a scenario where you know, set aside the addiction. Maybe there's an addiction involved, but there's a violent offense that resulted from the addiction. So we got a violent criminal with an addiction. Obviously, we want to help on the addiction front, but we have a crime. We have a record there. It could be drug trafficker. It could be a violent criminal. When a judge says, here's how much time you have to serve, you're telling me 85% of that time is in your custody, behind bars, at the state jail?
So 85% for most, right? So there's a window within that a person can serve up to 6 months in a transitional facility or a Missouri River Correction Center or the Dakota Women's Correctional Rehab Center out in New England through work release programs where they can go to work and come back. So there's a 6 month window. So otherwise, a person, no matter what, they still serve 85%. And even in that opportunity for the work release, that's still in confinement. Those people are still confined.
So in other words, so the 85% counts the transitional.
Counts that, the possibility of 6 months. And so like in the last 2 years, we've had 120 people who have released from prison with an 85% sentence. Out of those 120 people, only 30 actually qualified for a transitional facility placement or work release program from one of our prisons. So out of those 30, 27 of those succeeded. One failed because he had cigarettes. The other one failed because he was drinking at work. And the third one failed because he had a cell phone. And so all those three people ended up coming back to prison. The other 27 are successful and have moved on. And so the other 90, they were 100% of the 85% or whatever time, because you can lose good time. That's still that 15%. So they served at least 85% of that time in prison.
We should talk about good time when we come back, because that's another piece of the bill that you have some concern about what's being proposed. Am I right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. The one piece of this bill that it sounds like you have the least amount of problems with is the Attorney General saying violent criminals and drug traffickers need to serve 85% of their sentence, and let's define, correctly the violent crimes, which I talked to Drew Wrigley yesterday, the Attorney General, and I think he's waiting for some list of who you define as violent criminals so that the list can be compared? Is that going on right now?
He hasn't talked to me about it, so I'm not sure on that.
Yeah. But obviously, you got to get to a point where let's define a violent crime.
Right.
And your concern is there's a long list in the bill, so there's got to be some agreement on that. But talk about the provisions that you said were of a bigger concern for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that really hits us is truth in sentencing, just in itself. Any study you read, the same thing is, no matter where it lands, violence in prison goes up because you're reducing opportunities for people to...
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying, like what is being proposed now, to keep violent to criminals and drug traffickers in jail for their full sentence has ramifications because you're keeping them longer within the jail? Is that what you're saying?
So what it does is, so when you take away parole opportunity and you take away those other opportunities for an earlier conditional release. So again, I can't release anyone until the court says I can or the parole board. But you take away those opportunities, whether it's the parole board or you start restricting those opportunities for people to program. And so if you're encouraged to do programming, you're going to generally get more focused on that and less on all the other stuff that happens in prison, which is, I mean, we've got a bunch of criminals there. And so as you do that, you can take two roads. And so one of the nice things in North Dakota that we've done is really focused on programming. We really focused on giving people hope. So in the good time side, so truth in sentencing alone, just that one thing alone, will increase violence. Every study says it.
In the jail.
In the prison or in the jail,
okay.
Correct.
Yep.
So then when you now
By the way, I'm dumb here, but what's the difference between a prison and a jail?
Prison is, so in a jail, that's your counties or your multi-county, so Cass County Jail or Burleigh County Jail. Those are less than a year and a day generally. Anything over a year, that's going to be people going to prison. And
got
so
it.
Prison's the North Dakota State Penitentiary, the Missouri River Correction Center, James River Correction Center. And so this bill, actually what it does is it takes away the good time opportunity because a person that comes in, right now they can earn 5 days per month of good time. So if you behave well, if you got a job, you go to work, if you have education you got to do, you go to school, and if you have treatment, if you have things that you have to do for treatment, whether it's drug and alcohol treatment, whether it's violence, it's abuse against your loved ones, we have programs for all those. And you have to, and if you don't, then you don't earn that good time. This bill says that you have to do all three. So this bill says that I have to be going to GED, even though only 35% of the people that come to prison need a GED. It says that you have to do your treatment program and be in a treatment program. So we only offer so much, and we only have so much room for people to participate, and you have to have a job. When you think about prison, it's like a community. There's only so many jobs, so there's people that just can't get a job.
When you say get a job, you're talking about while incarcerated.
So this is mopping floors, this is working at Rough Rider Industries, that high paying job. It's working in the kitchen, it's doing laundry, it's
landscape and things.
It's keeping that prison alive and keeping that working well. So if they're not doing all three, they earn zero good time. So this bill actually is going to make our prisons even worse than just truth in sentencing, because now they can't even earn that towards that 15%. And so this is a critical piece that for our correctional officers, our frontline people, this bill will absolutely increase violence and put them in danger.
When you talk about good time again, I want to go back to the tenet that you're telling us that 85% of these violent criminals the violent criminals and drug traffickers, 85% of their sentence has to be served before they're let out.
The only
exception to quote unquote let out would be the 6 months of transitional. And by the way, does the judge have to approve the 6 months of when you say we can't let anybody out unless a judge says so? Is that judge also signing off on the transitional piece?
On the transitional piece, it's depending on the length of that sentence. So people that have a 10-year or less sentence, then I can approve that last 6 months. And again, it's a very small group of people that actually meet through all the approval process to get to that, to where I sign off. If it's longer than 10 years, then the parole board has to be involved as well. So then it would be, you'd have your contract administrator, you'd have the facility administrator, you'd have the warden, the director, and the parole board all having to sign off, as well as all the staff that work with that person prior to that.
But good time doesn't get you any less of the 85%.
Correct. that 15% for those people. So we're talking about two different people. So the 85% people, you have 15% that's good time. That's the earliest. That's the absolute earliest you can get out. The other group of people, they earn 5 days per month currently. This would switch it all so that everybody's earning only 15%, which is, it's a couple percent different. Not a big, that's not a huge deal. It's really about the way it's defined, how you can earn it. Most people will never have the opportunity to do all three things.
I think the reason law enforcement that I've talked to support what the Attorney General is proposing here is because, again, going back to how many of these people they see over and over and over again, if we're doing it right, how come they're seeing so many of these violent offenders as repeat offenders that are fleeing law enforcement, assaulting law enforcement, drug trafficking? That's the part I keep coming back to. We must be getting something wrong if these people are on this, you know, treadmill of reoffending. Am I wrong?
Well, in terms of all of that, I don't really know if I have a great answer, because there are going to be people, like we talked about, 40% of the people that leave, they return. 60% that leave our prison system don't come back. And I can see for sure from a law enforcement side, I used to work the county jail. I mean, that's where I was at, and you'd see people coming back. And I can understand the frustration, and that's where this bill started. It started as a conversation about fleeing. It talked about a conversation about preventing arrest. And this bill has just morphed into something else, which in the end, what we know is that we're going to have increased crime because of this bill. We're going to have increased violence. Because the people right now that have the ability to transition out of prison, they won't have that opportunity. And so those are the people that we know are doing the best. And so then now we're going to take that away. So the people that just leave directly from prison, those are the ones that we know do worse than the people that transition outside. So what this bill does is actually it takes the thing that we know is working. So it should, in fact, actually increase the problems that the people that we're all worried about, because none of us, in the end, our goal is no victims. All of us have the same exact goal. We all might have different ways that we think that we can get there, but it doesn't change the fact that our goal still stays the same. And that's where we got to start coming together. And I think part of this is this conversation, maybe out of all of this that can turn out good, is that we can all start sitting down at a table together and saying, okay, what are the things? Because right now I'm saying that this bill isn't actually targeting the thing, but maybe somebody else in that room's has a different idea that can say, you know what, let's target this.
Who should be in that room?
That should be law enforcement. That should be the courts. That should be state's attorneys. That should be the attorney general's office. We should all be sitting around a table having these conversations and thoughtfully working through and looking at what our data says. Look at what the attorney general's, look at what Kelly Lieben's data says here in Bismarck, and have that.
Why isn't that happening? It seems to be pretty basic common sense, and this debate is not new. It was debated in the last legislative session, so I know there's been a lot of time in between there to sort of talk about that. Why do you think that hasn't happened?
Because the debate last time was, again, it was about fleeing, it was about preventing arrest. That's what the debate was last time. This time, because again, the conversation would be almost the same. It's the only opinion that we have is this is what it's going to cost to address those things, which is different than what this bill is, right? So that's the problem. Is this bill came up, and if we would have had the conversation, we could have sat down, but we didn't, and we didn't know it was coming.
Okay, but there's no time like the present, right? So what you're describing ought to happen.
Correct.
Even if it's a debate between what the Senate passes or doesn't pass and what the House would take up, that conversation should happen. It sounds like the North Dakota way to solve a problem.
That is 100% accurate. Is that that's what we need to do, and this should be something the criminal justice system sits down and says, okay, let's talk about this and let's look at it.
But I want to make sure in our remaining minute here or so that you're saying if this becomes the law as it's proposed right now, you expect crime to go up in North Dakota.
Correct.
Because you're not going to have what you consider the transitional piece or the program piece, because now I've lost all incentive to actually, you know, get better or you know, do good time or participate in any of those things. I'm just going to serve my time and I'm going to go out and I'm going to reoffend. More of that will happen, is what you're saying.
That's going to happen, and we will have more crimes inside the prisons as well.
Yeah. But the bigger, obviously, the concern for the community.
Both sides.
Yeah, interesting. Half a minute left. If this does pass and goes through, what do you need more of to make it happen?
Well, I mean, if people spend more time in prison, then you need more prison beds. And it's not a secret that our prisons are full, our jails are full. Our partners in the jail have been absolutely wonderful working with and making sure that we have the space that we need. But the reality is this will increase that demand, and it'll increase it on August 1st because some of these things will go into place August 1st, and right away we'll have 200 people that we have to find a room for. So that's going to be, I mean, that's the biggest. And then I think the second part is that we did not do a staffing plan with this in consideration, and knowing that without the programs and without the hope that we currently have, that we're going to need more staff on the front line.
Just a quick bit of inside baseball. The Judiciary Committee approved this as a do pass. That's why they're debating it today. The Appropriations Committee said do not pass, obviously putting the dollars and cents behind what Colby's telling us there. Colby Braun, the director of the Corrections and Rehabilitation Department in North Dakota.